The Curve with Michelle Martin and Bernard Lim replay from Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to Influence. I'm Michelle Martin. You're on Money FM, where numbers are important to us. And for the Eurasian community, the number 100 is especially significant because 2019 marks the 100 years of the Eurasian Association's existence in Singapore. And celebrations for its centennial anniversary will take place from 31st December this year all the way through to next year. So how far has the Eurasian Association come? We're going to find out. My guests on Influence today are Vincent Shun. He is the first vice president of the Eurasian Association. How are you, Vincent?
Fantastic. Yourself?
Good. Really good. Looking forward to this. And also joining us, we were waiting with bated breath for food from the executive chef at Quentin's Eurasian Restaurant. Quentin Pereira, how are you?
Good, good. How are you?
Good. Welcome aboard. So, 100 years in Singapore for the Eurasian Association. Just tremendous. Can you share with us some milestones for the EA and perhaps for the wider community?
All right. First, the Eurasian Association actually started in 1919. And in the last 100 years, 99 years, I think we've come quite a long way in terms of not only progress, but also our contribution to the greater part of Singapore itself. I mean, there are quite a few well-known Eurasians. They are household names like former Minister for Law, Mr. E.W. Barker, and a few. And also sports luminaries like Douglas Nonis that represented Singapore at the 1964, sorry, represented Malaysia in the 64 Olympics. Singapore was still part of Malaysia at that time. And then also not forgetting, say, for instance, in 1956, out of 16 people selected for the hockey team to represent Singapore in Melbourne in 56, seven of them were Eurasians. So there are quite a few little milestones that we can talk about.
Tremendous. And when it comes to the business community, what springs to mind?
Well, straight off the bat into my head here right now, there's a guy called Jerry Rodriguez. He used to be the CEO of a listed company, Gull Technologies, way back in the mid-80s. Jerry's in his 70s right now. He'll probably get a little bit annoyed at me mentioning his age. But what he's doing, and this is really interesting, is that he's working with startup organizations that are incubated currently near the One North area. So, you know, he's identifying various organizations. He's going out there and he says, look, let me sit down with you guys and let me chart and, you know, progress for organizations such as that.
Great to hear. Yeah. So, you know, when we think of associations, many start off as self-help groupings. What was the motivation for the EA at its roots?
Okay, the self-help status was granted to the EA in 1994. Prior to that, of course, the EA, from a membership perspective, it went from something like 1,000 to about 91 prior to 1989. Then we started going out down there in a very massive recruitment exercise.
So you're dwindling?
We dwindled. I mean, you know, we had, even prior to the war, we probably had about 1,090, right? Of course, right now we have about 7,000 and change. But having said that, we recognize that within the Eurasian community itself, right, there were families that needed support financially from an education standpoint of view. So we, of course, Timothy de Souza, who was the past president, approached the government and says, look, you know, you got three other races that are part and parcel of this SHG network. How about us? I mean, you know, just to put it in simple terms, of course, there must have been a lot more negotiations, you know, beyond that. But so, yeah, we were granted self-help status in 94. We started the family support services in 1995. And 23 years later, I mean, you know, it's grown. And we are supporting Eurasians' education, family support services, and also the third pillar, of course, is in community development.
Tremendous. We're going to find out more about the work of the EA moving ahead, as you celebrate 100 years. What an achievement. But first, we want to welcome Quentin to the discussion. So, Quentin, I think when people think of Eurasians in Singapore, they think of, you know, the favorite family dishes, right? The pang susis. Yes, please. I was hoping you'd bring some. The curry devil. My mom once decided not not to make curry devil for Christmas. And I think there was a little minor revolt at home. And she actually had to wake up early Christmas morning, go shopping for the ingredients to make that particular dish. So nothing, they say, fuses Asian and European influences better than Eurasian food. Tell us about the influences behind the cuisine.
Basically, it's a traditional fusion of European and Asian flavors, you know, blended together. Because the Portuguese were the first to come 500 years ago. And then after that, the Dutch and then the English. And then when they came to this part of Asia, they wanted dishes that they were familiar with when they were in Europe. So what they did was they tried to do some things,
to blend.
Yes,
to what blend. What they were familiar with the spices probably
correct.
That they were discovering. Right?
Yeah, you see, so, and then when they married into the local women down here, you know, and then the women themselves, you know, they needed it more spicier and things like that. So that's how you get the best of both worlds.
Yes, yes. And tell us about some of the most well-known Eurasian dishes, perhaps. Everybody's mother makes the best curry devil.
Yep. Basically, right? Curry devil is curry debal. It's actually patois for leftovers. Mm. So it was actually served on Boxing Day. Mm. And with all the meats that were left from Christmas, then you just made this curry. And it was a bit spicy, and I guess a lot of people didn't know the meaning of the bal, and it became better known as devil, curry devil.
There you go. Mm. Great use of leftovers. Speaking of patois, tell us about, you know, what brings the community together in terms of language, and is that gaining momentum? Are more people interested in learning the language?
For a while, I suppose, again, that in the 70s and 80s, there were still quite a few families that actually spoke Kristang. And then Kristang started to be like a dying dialect or language. In the last 2 years or so, Kristang has started to pick up fervor again. There's a young kid by the name of Kevin Martins Wong that started this Koda Kristang. And now we're seeing more and more elderly people actually coming back and starting to learn Kristang. And also younger people, and non-Eurasians. You got Chinese, you got Indians all saying, listen, let's learn this language. And amazingly, he's managed to develop a dictionary outside of the normal Kristang that's, I think, close to about 5,000-6,000 words right now.
Just yeah. Remember, it's phenetic, so it's phonetic, slightly easier
yeah,
to pick
up. Yeah, but having said that, Michelle, he's also collaborating with another research person from NTU, yeah. that's from Portugal itself. And so it's making it a little bit more seamless for people to actually learn it.
Terrific. We're finding out a little bit more about the Eurasian community. The EA, or Eurasian Association, will celebrate its 100 years in Singapore from the 31st of December this year. And its centennial anniversary celebrations are open to the public. I'm Michelle Martin, chatting with Vincent Shun, who is the first Vice President of the Eurasian Association, and Quentin Pereira, better known as Chef Quentin, is the man behind Quentin's The Eurasian Restaurant. So would you say that the Eurasians as a minority group have always punched above their weight? Because demographically speaking, they've never been breached maybe 3.5% of the Singapore population?
Yeah, we have actually. Roughly about 2% of the population. Yeah, we've always been able to do that. Not only in education and sport, but politically, I think you're seeing Christopher De Souza right now is a member of parliament and just voted onto the central executive council of the PAP. I mean, yeah, so, you know, we've been doing that for quite a number of years already. Yeah.
So what do you have planned for these centennial celebrations, and do you plan to involve all of Singaporeans in them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've always been a very inclusive society or race. Four major things that are happening next year. One, in May, is the fundraising dinner that we're having at the Marriott, the one that's on South Beach. Then, of course, the continuation of what we did last year in 2017 is the Eurasian Festival at Tampines Hub. Prime Minister will be the guest of honour. This time it will be much larger. We're getting more of the community getting involved, more stalls and more games and things of that nature. September is the opening of the Heritage Centre, the new revamp of our museum, if you want to call it that. Massive revamp. And then
where is that located?
At the EA, Eurasian House at 139
Ceylon Road.
Mm. Yeah. And then, of course, we'll be having a book launch. The book launch will be basically a book, it's like a coffee table kind of book, going back up to 1919, personalities involved, photographs and things like that. Mr. Iswaran will be launching the book. That's in October, right? And then, of course, the Joseph Schooling grant. We had 12 people, 12 kids between 14 and 19 that applied for the grant. And we narrowed it down or shortlisted it to three. One person has already been granted that or has been told that they've won the award. Mm. And we're hoping to do that sometime in February when Joseph is in Singapore, when he starts his training here in Singapore sometime next year.
Fantastic. So we look forward to that. And that will all be rolling out from the end of December this year.
Yeah, end of December. Of course, the kickstart will be the 31st of December, which is the regular New Year's Eve party. They've planned quite a few things. They're keeping it a little bit closer to the chest. I don't know what's going to be happening, whether they're flying out from a cannon or whatever.
It's still top secret. Huh?
Yeah, it's still top secret.
But if you're hungry to get a taste of the culture, you can always head down to the EA and sample some of Chef Quentin's food, right, Chef?
Yeah. Yep, we're open to the public.
Open to the public. Yeah. And what do you want people to know about Eurasian cuisine? Is it accessible?
It is actually very accessible. Mm. I think the thing about Eurasian cuisine is a lot of people don't understand the flavors or the cuisine itself. They think that we Eurasians just eat potatoes and bread every day instead of the real food that we eat.
The range.
Yeah, we have taken the European, the Asian, especially the Malays, the Indians, the Chinese style of cooking, and we've got our own buah keluak, we've got our own curry devil. We do a lot of dishes that actually you will find it familiar.
Quite unique, quite familiar, and at the same time, I suppose, different.
Yeah, different.
Because of
different
the spin.
But familiar, yeah.
Lovely. Before we let you go, Vincent, tell us what can we expect from the association for the next 100 years?
I think
you can just walk us down the first few.
Sorry to interrupt. I think 100 is a bit too long. I'm looking personally, and I think we're looking at maybe the next 10 or 15 years, and we're looking towards the youth. I think that the youth will be taking over. They've come up with some very, very neat programs. They are actually the ones that have been arranging the dialogues with the various ministers in the past year. They've gotten involved into the carbon footprint. And I think that the youth of tomorrow,
yes,
is coming from the year itself. Mm-hmm. And I think that they are very energized, passionate about the things that they want to do. And they know how to actually get the other self-help groups also involved. So like I said, we are very, very inclusive. We like to get all the other races involved. And I see the youth actually taking the mantleship and running for the next 10 or 15 years.
That's great to hear.
I may not be around, but you know.
Hey, you never
who
know.
Who knows, eh?
You never know.
Yeah, you never know.
Thank you so much for being here. Vincent Shun, the first vice president of the Eurasian Association there. Also joining us, Quentin Pereira, executive chef at Quentin's The Eurasian Restaurant. Merry Christmas, guys.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.